Good morning. This is Matt Ginter, Head of Investor Relations for 3M, and thanks for joining us today. As we've been doing the last several quarters, both our CEO, George Buckley, and our CFO, Pat Campbell, will be addressing you today, and of course, we'll have plenty of time for your questions. Before we begin, please take a moment to read the Safe Harbor Statement on slide 2. During today's conference call, we will make certain predictive statements that reflect our current views and estimates about our future performance and financial results. These statements are based on certain assumptions and expectations of future events that are subject to risks and uncertainties. Item 1A of our most recent Forms 10K and 10Q lists some of the most important risk factors that could cause actual results to differ from our predictions. So with that, let's begin by turning to slide number 3, and I will turn the program over to George.
Thank you very much, Matt, and good morning, everybody. The most important contribution I think that we can make this morning is to give you some understanding of what we see happening out there in the market. I think it's important to tell you, to the best of our knowledge and belief, what we think might come next. Our explanation will tell you how we're thinking about the business conditions and how we're managing the company through the tempest. Pat will, of course, detail the quarter and year for you, and I'll return with our outlook and more specifics about what we're doing to combat the effects of the market downturn, which almost every company in the world sees today. First, let's speak about the big picture. Ordinarily, the world's economies are partially out of phase, and some are even out of synchronism. In normal times, we might see Germany's economy growing, while the U.S. economy is shrinking, or perhaps Japan is contracting while the U.S. economy is expanding. The fourth quarter, however, was different from any pattern we've ever seen before. That is, the near synchronization of the world's economy in simultaneous contraction. We did have one reporting segment with positive organic sales growth in quarter four, and that was our healthcare business, and safety and security was relatively close. During times like these, it's great to have businesses like this in our portfolio. The most rapid slowdowns that we saw were in the consumer electronics-based business, supplying components and consumables for phones, TVs, and computers, all located in Asia. You've all seen what's been happening to suppliers and OEMs in that market. Automotive and telecoms also continued to weaken, as did residential housing. Overall, we saw all the classic signs one would expect at times like these: cancel orders, big inventory corrections in the channel, long factory shutdowns, many extending well into January, layoffs, and overall weak business conditions. While weak business conditions, poor consumer confidence, and the psychological fear factor made it worse, we believe the principal cause of the severe downturn was the shortage of credit to lubricate the wheels of global commerce. That fact effectively locked the cycles of the world's major economies into synchronism and into shrinking mode. Under such conditions, 3M's geographic market diversity is less helpful than normal, though diversity of end markets still does. Obviously, not all our end markets are shrinking at the same rate, and not all have the same cyclic periodicity. In fact, a few, our health information systems, aerospace, and security services, for example, are still growing. There are always three principal effects that one sees at times like these. The first is that the rate of contraction in sales at wholesale is always a multiple of the rate of contraction in point of sale or retail. This happens as the channel tries to drain the excess inventory off as fast as possible, which it needs to do at a rate higher than its own point of sale shrinkage. This phenomenon is particularly acute in short cycle, high term businesses such as electronics or retail. In fast-turning, short-cycle businesses, one would expect the contraction ratio I mentioned just now to be higher than in a slow-turning, longer-cycle business. At 3M, this wholesale-to-point-of-sale contraction ratio for the consolidated company is about 3, with some individual end markets being higher or lower, as the case may be. So the trick here is not to be deceived by a fall in wholesale sales of, say, 15%, because the end market would likely have dropped by a much smaller number, say 5 to 7%. That's the number that should be reached after all the sales transients settle down. In a 100% efficient channel, flushing out the excess inventory would take about one inventory cycle to complete, that is one turn or so. But as a practical matter, most channels would be a little less efficient than that, and the full correction would take a little longer to happen. The second factor that one nearly always sees in these cases is an overshoot in inventory, as sales fall faster than the cuts in a company's manufacturing rates. This is because the sales data, which a short cycle company receives, is always later than the necessary corrective line rate actions it has to take. It's especially true in a company with long supply chains like ours, where we have 2/3 of our sales internationally and 2/3 of our manufacturing in the United States. The consequence is an overshoot of inventory, albeit a temporary one. This is not a fundamental problem, just the nature of the beast in a short cycle, long supply chain company. We're already all over that topic. Receivables are another thing to watch as the channel tries to conserve cash and push out its own payable stream. We saw all of these factors at work in the fourth quarter at 3M. As inventory corrections are made, the third factor that appears is reduced factory absorption. Gross margins fall until the factory cost, end market demand, and line rates all come into balance. We expect to see some of this latter factor at work in the first and second quarters as we drive down inventory. But we should remember that when the economy recovers, we'll see the other and more positive side of this factory absorption curve as pipelines fill correspondingly faster than the point of sale growth. The principal questions, of course, are how long and how deep the recession will be. And more importantly, what actions 3M is taking, not only to combat current conditions, but to emerge an even stronger company. I'll address the first point in a few minutes when I discuss our outlook. As to what 3M is doing, we've worked very hard to get ahead of the recession. We actually began restructuring in the second quarter of last year as we saw the slowdown coming. In the fourth quarter alone, we reduced over 2,400 full-time positions worldwide, slightly higher than the number that we shared with you in December. These job eliminations spanned all sectors and all geographies, but were particularly focused on those developed economies experiencing the most sales pressure. In addition, we've furloughed over 1,000 factory workers until production volumes return to more normal levels. Contract workers are also being reduced to only those considered essential. At a minimum, these actions in total will save the company $235 million in 2009. Last October, the leadership team at 3M decided to defer merit pay increases in 2009, except in those cases where local laws prohibit it. That will save us over $100 million annually. We're also amending our policy on bank vacation, effectively phasing it out, which will also save the company over $100 million in each of the next 2 years. In a tight economy, cash is always king. For 2009, we've already cut capital spending plans by about $500 million, a cut of more than 30%. A substantial amount of the remaining spending is simply carryover from 2008 or for tooling needed for new products and continued operations. All expense spending is currently on a need-to-do-only basis. Also, to preserve cash, we halted stock repurchases until the market offers more visibility, and we are declining to offer extended credit terms to drive sales. You can be assured that we will continue to run the business prudently as conditions dictate. Well, that's a quick summary of where we're at, so I'll now turn it over to Pat and then return for a discussion of where we'll be going. Pat?
Thanks, George, and good morning, everyone. Excuse me. Please turn to slide number 5. These days, it's easy to get caught up in the short term, given the current economic and credit market difficulties. But it is important to remember that we manage our business for long-term success. Therefore, I will begin today's discussion with a quick review of our full year 2008 results before I cover the fourth quarter. All information that I will present today will exclude special items, which are fully described in the attachment in today's press release. The strength and consistency of our global portfolio delivered record annual sales of $25.3 billion, or up 3.3% over last year. Excluding optical systems, which most of you know is going through a substantial business transition, sales increased 6.5%. 2008 gross margins declined 70 basis points versus last year and were flat year-on-year, excluding optical. This is a good result for the year considering the many challenges we faced, including record-high commodity prices and, of course, rapid volume declines in Q4. Full-year operating income was $5.5 billion, about flat versus last year, or up a solid 9.2%, excluding optical. Our 2008 tax rate for the year was just under 31%, down almost a full point from 2007, and in line with our full-year expectations. We have, in fact, reduced our tax rate for four consecutive years, from 32.5% in 2004 to now just below 31%, and there's more room to improve. Per share earnings for 2008 were $5.17, up 3.8% year-on-year, or up over 14%, excluding optical. Overall, 2008 was a very good but challenging year for 3M. We had many successes throughout the year, but we also were negatively impacted by the secular transition of our optical film business and the rapid economic decline later in the year. Let's now turn our attention to the fourth quarter results. Please turn to slide number 6. Fourth quarter sales were $5.5 billion, down 11.2% versus last year, or down 8% excluding optical. Gross margins were lower by 1.8%, with 1.1 points of the decline attributed to optical. Lower capacity utilization was also a major factor as we adjusted production schedules in response to declining demand. SG&A costs declined $92 million year-on-year, or 7.3%, as we aggressively reduced G&A cost in the fourth quarter. Given the rapid decline in sales during the quarter, we also pared back sales and marketing costs in certain businesses. We invested $337 million in R&D in the quarter, or 6.1% to sales. This ratio was a little higher than last year's fourth quarter, although in absolute dollar terms, we did take costs down by 5.6%. Our long-term commitment to R&D is unchanged. But in this economic environment, we're closely scrutinizing all discretionary investments, including the labs. Fourth quarter operating margins were 17.7%, down about 3 points versus the prior year, or down 1.3% excluding optical. You may have noticed in the attachments in today's press release that the corporate and unallocated had operating income of $34 million in the fourth quarter. As has been the case throughout 2008, the majority of this gain is due to lower year-on-year pension expense of $29 million. Rather than allocate this benefit back to our businesses, we elected to record this expense reduction in corporate and unallocated, as this number has a tendency to swing on an annual basis. Net interest expense was $28 million, down $5 million year-on-year, largely due to lower interest rates. Also recall that in last year's fourth quarter, we booked an $8 million loss related to an impaired auction rate security. There were no such adjustments in the current quarter. Finally, as I previously mentioned, per share earnings declined 18.5% to 97 cents. Please turn to slide number 7 for a breakdown of our quarterly sales change. Worldwide sales declined 11.2%, 5 points of which was due to currency. Sales in local currencies declined 6%, about equally shared between the U.S. and international. Organic volumes declined 11%, which was in line with our guidance on December 8th. A bright spot in the quarter was net selling prices, which rose 1.7%, our best performance in many years. Finally, acquisitions added just over 3 points to overall growth in the quarter. The economy was certainly tough on many of our industrial-based businesses, but there were a couple of bright spots in the portfolio. Healthcare, for example, delivered a strong 4.5% local currency growth, and Safety, Security, and Protection Services delivered over 13%, driven by the 2008 acquisition of Aero Technologies. I will talk more about sales in the business segments later. Fourth quarter U.S. sales declined 6%. Again, we saw outstanding growth in Safety, Security, and Protection and healthcare. But overall growth was more than offset by sales declines in our other four segments. International local currency sales declined 6.5% as organic volumes were down 10%, selling prices rose 1%, and acquisitions added 2.6 points to growth. Excluding optical, International local currency sales declined 80 basis points. Organic volumes were down 6%, which was almost entirely offset by the combination of selling prices and acquisitions, which added 2.2 and 3 points to growth, respectively. In local currency terms, sales increased by 9% in Latin America and 3% in Canada, while Europe declined 1.7%. Local currency sales declined by 17% in Asia Pacific, 12% of which is due to optical systems. Please turn to slide 8 for a review of the balance sheet and cash flow metrics for the fourth quarter. Free cash flow for the quarter was $662 million versus $1.3 billion in the fourth quarter of 2007. Approximately half of the decline is due to lower operating results, with the remainder due to higher international pension contributions, capital expenditures, and cash tax payments. Year-end working capital turns were 4.5, a decline of 0.8 turns year-on-year and 0.5 turns sequentially. These declines are primarily driven by the rapid slowdown in business activity, along with customers drawing down inventories in many industries faster than we could adjust our own production schedules. Capital expenditures came in at $463 million, up $72 million year-on-year and $87 million sequentially. Full year 2008 capital expenditures were $1,471,000,000, which was slightly above our plan. This increase, however, is related to timing and is offset in our capital expenditure outlook for 2009, which is down greater than 30%, as George mentioned, to less than $1 billion. Dividends were up slightly versus last year to $346 million. Share repurchases were light this quarter at $34 million. Reflecting our desire to conserve cash in light of the current economic and credit environments. We have halted our program until the clouds clear. Please now turn to slide 9, where I will recap the status of our global pension and post-retirement benefit plans. We all know how tough 2008 was on investors. Since year-end 2007, the funded status of our global pension and post-retirement plans has moved from 100% funded to 85%. Our U.S. plans funded status stood at 89%, with our qualified plan at 92% at year-end 2008, and our international plans finished the year at 75%. I want to commend our pension management team for delivering 2008 U.S. plan asset returns of a negative 13.6%, much better than the overall market, and a remarkable performance considering the difficult market environment. The team drove this result via an effective hedging strategy on both the interest rate and equity fronts. From an earnings standpoint, we expect a 7 cent per share headwind from pension and post-retirement benefit expense in 2009 versus 2008. The changes in funded status of our plan significantly impacted several lines of our balance sheet at year-end. These adjustments resulted in a decrease to stockholders' equity of $2.3 billion. For further details, please refer to Note J in the attachment to today's press release. Looking ahead, our return on asset assumption for the U.S. plan remained unchanged at 8.5%, while the discount rate increased 14 basis points from 2008 to 6.14%. For 2009, we estimate that we'll inject additional cash into the worldwide plans in the range of $600 to $850 million versus the $400 million that we did in 2008. Now let's examine the fourth quarter performance for each of our segments, beginning with our largest segment, Industrial and Transportation. Industrial and Transportation has been among those most affected by the economy, particularly in big industries such as automotive and electronics. Sales for the quarter were $1.7 billion, an 11.3% decline versus 2007. Local currency sales were down 6.3%, including a positive 3.2% impact from acquisitions. Operating income declined 33% to $239 million, with margins dipping to 14.3% for the quarter. Full-year sales looked far more positive, with sales up 7.6% to $7.8 billion, and operating profit likewise increased 2.4% to $1.5 billion. Strong operational discipline was the key to protecting the bottom line, as full-year operating margins had held relatively steady at just under 20%. Businesses that are heavily linked to automotive manufacturing, namely our auto OEM and Dyneon, saw local currency declines of 20% plus in the quarter, as did businesses selling to the electronics industry, such as high-tech tapes and adhesives. Most other areas experienced single-digit contractions. A bright spot in the quarter was our automotive aftermarket business, which drove solid double-digit local currency growth, largely driven by the recent acquisition of Meguiar's and Bondo. These are two outstanding brands in the professional body shop trade and a perfect fit for 3M. Geographically speaking, Q4 local currency sales were down in all regions, and the largest declines in the U.S. and Asia-Pacific, followed by Europe. Local currency sales were about flat in Latin America. I characterized 2008 as a tale of two distinct chapters for industrial transportation. The first was January through October, characterized by outstanding top and bottom line growth across most of the portfolio. The second chapter was the combined months of November and December, where by and large our customers brought their operations to a screeching halt. We have effectively reinvented this segment over a number of years. We expect that the strength of our new products, supply chain improvements, and expansion into areas like energy, aerospace, filtration, and now renewable energy will help to carry us through some very challenging times. Now please turn to slide 11. Healthcare completed an outstanding 2008 with an impressive fourth quarter. Sales topped $1 billion in the quarter, despite a nearly 7-point penalty from currency. In local currency terms, sales rose an impressive 4.5%, including 2.2% from acquisitions. Likewise, margins increased nearly 2% to 28.9%, the highest in the company, as profits improved 4.5% to $298 million. Our healthcare team pulled this off in a highly competitive environment where the 3M brand and quality is clearly making a difference. Doctors, hospitals, and other medical service providers continue to show a strong preference for our products. During the quarter, we saw solid growth in the medical products area, specifically in our core infection prevention and skin and wound products. To build for the future, we also entered into new licensing agreements within our drug delivery systems business, which expanded 3M's extensive inhalation technology platforms for many partners in the pharmaceutical and biotech industries. Looking geographically, the U.S. and Asia-Pacific led sales growth, and Latin America, with Latin America showing remarkable operational discipline to drive a double-digit increase in operating income. For the full year, healthcare's results were outstanding, with sales increasing 8.2% to $4.3 billion, and profits up 13% year-over-year to $1.2 billion. Operating income margins came in at 28.7%. Local currency sales were up 6.8%, largely organic, but also including 1.7% from acquisitions. In 2008, we closed a number of important bolt-on acquisitions in healthcare, including Top Service, a German orthodontic technology and services company offering digital lingual solutions. ImTech, an Oklahoma-based manufacturer of dental implants and cone beam computerized tomography, and Solumed, a Quebec-based developer and marketer of leading-edge medical products designed to prevent infections in operating rooms and hospitals. Full-year sales were led by double-digit increases in our medical, dental, and orthodontics businesses. Sales grew in all geographies, led by double-digit gains in Asia-Pacific and Latin America. Please turn to slide 12 for a recap of our Safety, Security, and Protection Services segment. Sales in this business rose 2.9% in the fourth quarter to $769 million. Local currency sales increased by 13%, driven by a 2008 acquisition of Aero Technologies. Aero contributed approximately 16 points of growth in the quarter. The more we know about this acquisition, the more we like it, as Aero has proven to be a great fit with 3M. If you're not familiar, for decades we held the global leadership position in respiratory protection, but had only forged a small position in hearing protection. Aero is the global leader in hearing protection, so the synergies are obvious. On a geographic basis, sales for the quarter were strongest in the U.S., followed by the Asia-Pacific region. Operating income for the quarter declined 3.5%, and margins dipped about a point to 16.7%. Full-year sales increased 19%. In local currency terms, sales rose 18%, comprised of 14
points from acquisitions and 2 points each from organic and selling price increases. Divestitures were a 2-point drag on year-to-date sales. Worldwide operating income was up 21% to $774 million, and margins increased 40 basis points to a robust 21.3%. Now please turn to slide 13 for details covering our consumer and office business. Sales declined 11.2% to $765 million in the fourth quarter. Local currency sales were down 6.5%, and currency impact hurt sales by just under 5 points. Over half of our sales in consumer office are generated in the United States, so let's start there. In our U.S. business, sales declined about 13%. By far the biggest contributor to this decline was the retail and wholesale office channel, as the combination of massive office worker layoffs and declines in store traffic have significantly impacted sales. Our businesses serve other U.S. retail channels performed well in the fourth quarter despite this rough economic environment. Sales of home care products such as Scotch-Brite scrubbers were about flat in the quarter, and sales to the do-it-yourself retail channel were down by low single digits. Elsewhere around the globe, our consumer office business drove positive local currency sales growth in both Latin America and Asia Pacific, but overall growth was muted by declines in Europe. Worldwide operating profits declined 24%, with operating profit margins of 15.5%. For the full year, sales grew just over 1%. Operating income declined 1.5%, and margins were just shy of 20%. An outstanding result, all things considered. This business has done a fabulous job of creating new products and designing new programs and planograms for their large U.S. customers in order to mitigate what is a very tough end market situation. Please turn to slide 14. Fourth quarter sales in display and graphics were $685 million. Sales declined 28%, or about 8%, excluding optical, which most of you know is in the midst of a transition from a hyper-growth business a few years ago to one that is more commoditized in nature. Optical film demand declined in November and December as most manufacturers and retailers throttled back hard on orders. This rapid end market contraction and inventory reduction in portion of the channel drove sales declines in optical systems of 48%, not unlike many other suppliers that sell into this industry. Traffic safety systems posted fourth quarter local currency sales growth of nearly 3%, including 2.3% from the fourth quarter acquisition of a Finnish license plate provider in France. This acquisition broadens our vehicle registration solutions offering beyond reflective sheeting to Finnish license plates. And finally, the commercial graphics business experienced mid-single-digit local currency declines as media and advertising budgets have been cut across the globe. Operating margins in display and graphics were just over 10% for the quarter. For the full year, sales in this business declined 16.6%, and profits dropped 44% to $622 million. Operating margins were over 19% for the year. We have taken aggressive action throughout 2008 to reduce our cost structure throughout display and graphics, with particular focus on our optical systems business. We expect these actions to generate 2009 cost savings of $45 million. On the new product front, 3M's M-Pro, an ultra-compact LED-based projection engine for business and entertainment use, continued to gain sales momentum from recent national media attention, including Popular Science, MSNBC, Fox, and National Public Radio. The next-generation engine, MM200, debuted at the Consumer Electronics Show in January of this year and will be available for sale this year. And in LCD monitors, we continue to champion the energy savings story with our high-performance films. We're making good progress, but are still in early stages. Finally, please turn to slide 15 for an overview of results for the electro and communications business. The most important message here is that the important markets served by this business are consumer electronics and telecommunications, along with the global power utility industry. Clearly, the weak holiday season experienced by consumer electronics retailers had huge impact on our sales. Likewise, our telecom customers continue to cut back on new capacity and upgrades of existing equipment. We, in fact, had a large number of equipment orders canceled during the fourth quarter. As a result of this, end market contraction, sales in electrical communications declined by 15% in the fourth quarter. Sales in local currency decreased about 12%, and currency impact hurt sales by about 3%. Profits declined almost 31%, and margins were 14.5%. On a more positive note, we celebrated another win in our electrical markets business as we sold another installation of our aluminum composite conductor to an energy service provider in Brazil. So things continue to progress for this new 3M solution in the electrical transmission space. For 2008, we increased both sales and profits in electrical communications by about 1% to $2.8 billion and $538 million, respectively. Operating margins held steady versus 2007 levels at 19.3%. That concludes my formal comments, so now I'll turn the program back over to George. George?
Thank you very much, Pat. Let me now answer the question I posed earlier, which was how long and deep will the recession be, and what are the implications for 3M? It would be very easy for me right now to evade the question of what's going to happen in the economy and hide behind a curtain of uncertainty and volatility. But I'm not going to do that because I don't think it's helpful. While I'll try to stay out of the business of being an economist, I think I have an obligation to give you the best forward-looking view I can at this time, balancing all the factors that we know about today. But please recognize that this is a forward view and not everything is known. If we believe the economy is deterministic, in the absence of clear visibility from the more complex econometric models that we're all familiar with, a simple cyclic analysis reveals quite a lot about what's happening. The answers it gives may not be precise, but we think it can bring a directionally correct answer for our planning purposes. In the interest of time, I'll pass over the details of how and give you the 30,000-foot level answers. The analysis suggests that the U.S. economy will continue to contract through the end of the second quarter of 2009, possibly marginally later. If our methodology holds true, we will see sequential quarter-on-quarter economic growth in the third quarter of 2009 onwards, with the U.S. returning to year-over-year growth at the end of the fourth quarter. So how will this summary economic picture affect 3M? The models we are using predicts a worse economy, worse global economy in the first quarter of 2009 than the fourth of 2008. It suggests underlying organic sales volume will be lower in the first quarter than in the fourth quarter for two reasons. The first and simplest reason is that we had only 2 months of weak sales in Q4, while we expect a full three in Q1. Second, the continued softening of the economy, if correct, will cause organic volumes to be a slightly worse position than they were in the fourth quarter of 2008. On this basis, we need to recognize that the first quarter is probably going to be the toughest one of this recession for 3M. I hope I'm wrong, but we're approaching the costs, the forecasting, and the control elements of our business with this assumption in mind. Moving on, end markets in the second quarter should be slightly weaker than the first quarter, but even allowing for this, 3M sales should recover a little in Q2 as the inventory correction transients begin to bleed off. This presumes that we have a channel that can work reasonably efficiently to clear the excess inventory and one which acts rationally in the face of many unknowns. The third quarter should finally produce sequential quarter-over-quarter economic growth and gathering momentum into the fourth. At the end of the fourth quarter or so, the U.S. economy should return to positive year-over-year growth. The fourth quarter for us will also see the benefit of easier year-over-year comparisons on both volume and on currency. But overall, deleveraging will pull down earnings somewhat more than sales during the year. So for 2009 in total, the summary effects of the dynamics produces growth rates in the middle of our announced range. So to reiterate, we're planning that organic volumes will decline in the range of 5 to 9% for the year. This is a couple of points below what we signaled in December, and the difference is largely attributable to the dramatic decline in electronics and weaker than expected business conditions in both Latin America and Asia generally. These volume levels place EPS in the band $4.30 to $4.70, down about 20 cents from our estimates in early December, and in line with current consensus. Please know that we are working hard to ensure that 3M will emerge a much stronger company, And after the rebuilding of our core this past 3 years, we are taking market share in most every area. Paraphrasing George Bernard Shaw, the best way to predict the future is to create it. And toward that end, as Pat outlined, we're continuing to invest significantly in R&D. Innovation has always been our not-so-secret competitive deadly weapon, and nothing has changed there. We think it's even more important in these times to differentiate ourselves from the competition through great products and great service, and we expect to earn new business as customers turn to proven suppliers with a demonstrated capability to deliver in good times and in bad. It also provides the launch platform for growth as the economy recovers. We will, of course, prioritize our R&D and other investments properly, and we will emerge from the downturn a leaner and more powerful company. Overall, I'm very optimistic about our prospects for sustained success. The story of our company is not only about Q1 or even about 2009. We significantly strengthened our company strategically in 2008, and we intend to continue that direction in 2009 and well beyond. Planning conservatively, taking decisive action, and driving innovation around the world continues to be our mantra. So with those remarks, I'd like to turn the call over to you for any questions that you might have. Thank you very much for listening, everyone.
At this time, I would like to remind everyone, in order to ask a question, please press star, then the number one on your telephone keypad. If you would like to withdraw your question, press the pound key. If you are on a speakerphone, please pick up your handset before entering your request. Please limit your participation to one question and one follow-up. We'll pause for just a moment to compile the Q&A roster. Our first question comes from a line of Scott Davis with Morgan Stanley.
Hi, good morning, everyone.
Good morning, Scott.
Yes, D&G margins were obviously weak, and you addressed it in your commentary. Rather than kind of looking backwards, maybe it makes some sense to talk a little bit about the end game in that business and how you're seeing it playing out in 2009. I believe in your last investor meeting, you felt like you were coming close to bottoming out there on the profit side, but clearly things got worse. I mean, does this business something? Are there certain components of this business that it's better off that, you know, in the long term you just exit and, you know, write off the investment, or is it something where it just needs more time to work its way out?
Thanks, Scott, for the question. I think it is a very interesting question. You can imagine it's one that we've thought about inside our company quite a lot. If you separate TVs from the balance of the other segments, you know, of the four segments, take out TVs, that was the one that did the worst in the fourth quarter. Every part of that business is holding share, so that's a piece of good news. Clearly, what was going on in the economy obviously affected those guys. You saw what happened to some of our competitors, some of our contemporaries, some of the suppliers. You know how their results were just equally reflective of the ones that we saw too. We were just part of that same puzzle. So I think that our conclusion is that this has, absent the fourth quarter, Scott, absent the sort of this aberration, shall we say, in the fourth quarter, and of course nobody can guarantee it won't run over into the first, but absent that aberration, I think the value proposition is still strong. This is a business that ends up around $1 billion or thereabouts, lower margins clearly than it was in the past. And the difficulty has always been, Scott, when we thought about how do you separate one of these businesses, is one of the challenges really is the structure of 3M, where everything's integrated. You know, plants are shared, lines are shared, technology is shared, patents are used in one place and used in another. Very, very challenging to figure out how to peel a piece off if you so wish. So, for the moment, I think the best thing for us to do is to continue as we're going. We are doing extraordinarily well, Scott, oddly enough, in capturing business now, which is energy-driven. So using, instead of the old days where our films were used for brightness enhancement, they're now used to dim the brightness a little bit and take out bulbs and reduce energy costs. So that does seem to be gathering momentum. And I think what we're going to have to do is just wait here until this current economic malaise passes, and then make an assessment as whether that strategy continues to be an executable one, and then make a final decision on what's best to do.
Okay, and as a follow-up, a different follow-up, of course, but, you know, talk a little bit about the M&A environment of your plans. I mean, you stopped buying back stock, and that's understandable, but you have a AA rating that's, you arguably have the best balance sheet in industrials right now. I mean, how do you think about the environment for M&A in 09 and how you can really capitalize on others, the weaknesses that maybe weaker competitors or peers have?
I'll offer a comment, and I'll let Pat chip in if he wants on the end of it, Scott. I think, generally speaking, the observations you make are correct. There ought to be, finally, some opportunities coming up. We are seeing pricing going down, people becoming more realistic about pricing. Of course, getting their signature on the sale and purchase agreement is another matter, but nevertheless, we are seeing some of that kind of stuff. Pat and I took the decision to cool acquisitions in the United States simply as a means of preserving cash here. We've been less minded to do that overseas, so we will probably continue to do some overseas. I think that we'll sort of lay in the weeds and wait for some good opportunities. Obviously, we're studying many people, you can imagine, trying to make sure that we're properly prepared, because you know how these things have been going. It's the call that comes on Friday and the acquisition is agreed by Sunday. So you have to be prepared, and you have to be prepared to move swiftly. So I think that we will keep our powder dry on that subject. We're certainly not going to go out and waste any money, but I do think, from what I'm seeing, there are some decent opportunities that might come up, and assuming that we can finance it without in any way injuring our company, we will certainly take a long and hard look at that. So it's not off the table, Scott, but we will be selective in what we do.
Scott, Pat here, we are very mindful that we are kind of in a premier class the industrial companies, and we do plan to stay there. So we're obviously we are much more of a buy at our price, okay? Then they'll be at our terms, not necessarily what the seller would want to sell at. So from that standpoint, we are doing everything we need to from a cash management standpoint to ensure that we remain a very premium grade credit.
Gotcha. Thank you, guys.
Thanks, Scott.
Our next question comes from the line of David Begleiter with Deutsche Bank. Good morning.
Morning, David.
Morning.
George, on healthcare, can healthcare be up next year in either sales or profits? And how much of healthcare is either discretionary or, in your view, economically sensitive?
I don't think there's any real reason to believe it can't, David. You know, the stuff that supplies the operating theater, I mean, the vast majority of that is happenstance. It will be what it will be. I'm only teasing you here, David. You're not going to decide when you get appendicitis or not. So forgive me there for teasing you a little bit, David. But I understand where you're going in the dental business. There are clearly some procedures which are discretionary, whether that's orthodontics or even getting a new crown may well be. Will be discretionary at some level. So I think that the principal core of the medical business is going to be fine. AHIS, for example, is still growing very strongly. The health information systems business is growing very well. As Pat outlined, the vast majority of our healthcare business was also doing quite well. So I think the only unknown is, and it is an unknown, Dave. It doesn't mean I'm trying to avoid answering your question. The only unknown out there is how will people respond to the discretionary portion of dental. I will, though, just remind you that we continue to innovate some absolutely fabulous stuff on digital dentistry, some wonderful acquisitions and new technologies out there on lingual care, real breakthrough ideas that are coming. And in the end, some people will buy that stuff because it is more effective, not just because it's new technology, but because it is more effective in treating certain conditions. So I think that we have to put a probable question mark alongside dental, but on the balance of the business, probably being pretty optimistic. Would you agree, Matt?
Yeah, I would agree. I guess, Dave,
Dental probably is the one that's probably most exposed to some level of kind of discretionary activity. Our drug delivery business is a little bit lumpy at times, but on a long-term basis, it's a very solid business. 2009 is probably will be a little more difficult year for them relative to some of their contracts and so forth. But as I look at healthcare and look at, you know, against maybe some other industrials, you know, healthcare being, you know, just under say 20% of the portfolio, and if healthcare can, you know, remain flat, and actually they've got some acquisitions that ought to add some growth, you know, next year. You know, that's good. You know, that's worth a good maybe 2 points or so of growth rate, you know, for us, you know, on a composite basis. So we feel very good about the healthcare business.
And George, that's helpful. Just on China, can you give us your perspective on just how bad China is overall?
Well, you know, it's a question of bad. Our sales in the fourth quarter, David, were about flat with last year. So this is not there's not any kind of cataclysmic problem in China, but clearly they've cooled, and they reflect the balance of the world economy, their supply to the world economy, and I think there'll probably be a move in China. China has a lot of infrastructure programs it wants to get completed. I suspect, given the economic power of China, that will go forward. That's certainly all the indications we're receiving. So I think China probably, after a dip in the fourth and maybe the first, probably begins to come back a little bit, maybe to growth rates at a half or two-thirds of what they were before, reflecting what's going on in the world economy. That would be my guess. So I think China's going to be okay, David. And we've got huge penetration opportunities in China, huge, with many of the businesses that we are. So we have decided that we're going to advance some investments in China to make sure that where these growth opportunities exist, to the extent we can do it prudently, we're going to try to take advantage of those opportunities.
Thank you.
Thank you, David.
Our next question comes from the line of Shannon O'Callaghan with Barclays Capital. Good morning.
Good morning, Shannon.
Hey, a couple margin questions. In terms of the assumption, are you guys still looking for flat margins year over year? And if so, can you give us kind of a walk of how we get there from here?
Well, Shannon, it's not too dissimilar from what we presented in December. Now, as George outlined, we've kind of slid the volume curve over by about 2 points. And if I recall, the comments I made in December was at, you know, about a 5% volume decline, we thought we could hold, you know, be, you know, relatively close to holding margins. As you slide a little more to 7 to 9, it becomes, you know, a little more difficult to do that on the margin. So I'd say at the upper end of the volume range, our margins probably hold reasonably close, but then you probably slide them a little bit. You know, on the bottom end, you know, we may have a point of risk off of, 08 levels.
So I guess what are the things that change then, relative to this quarter? I mean, organically, you were down kind of at the high end of what you're looking for, 09, and we had, 310 basis points of contraction. So what was, I mean,
I think you have to be a little cautious, Shannon. When you have an abrupt change, okay, in volumes, your margins aren't going to perform as well as on a more steady state, basis. There's no doubt that Q4, as George outlined, Q1 will, at least as we see it today, will be by far the most difficult quarter we have, both probably top and bottom line. And then as we work through the inventory correction and as manufacturers, regain production and so forth, later in the year we'll see the recovery is the way that we would see it. So Q4 margins obviously were under pressure. Q1 you'll see, a very similar trait, and then, through the back end of 2009 you'll see a recovery.
Okay, and just kind of a follow-up to that, I mean, George, you mentioned, talking about optical, kind of an aberration in 4Q, which, in a more extreme way is getting to what Pat's talking about with, sharp corrections impacting margins unusually strongly. What do you mean by aberration? I mean, what do we think about, you know, for the normal margins of that business? I mean, you said it's not losing share anymore, so it's mainly, you know, is this sharp correction in the quarter. What do you think is normal for that now?
Well, I think, obviously, Shannon, it's going to be an interesting question as to how long this particular starvation diet the electronic people are on lasts. It certainly is going to last, I think, through this quarter. May last a little longer. But if I take that out, Shannon, and think about where this business is going to go in stasis, I think this business, there's nothing that I know that will convince me yet or suggest it to me yet that this is anything other than about a $1 billion business in late teen margins of that order. Now, if there's continued decline and there's continued commoditization, Shannon, those margins might come under pressure. But I think that's the sort of range. If you can sort of look past the next quarter, even the next two quarters, as they recover, and some of the volume in the energy areas begins to pick back up again, then I think it's probably going to settle down in that range. Got any other opinion, Pat?
No, I think that's that would be a fair read.
Okay. Thanks a lot.
Thanks, Shannon.
Our next question comes from the line of John McNulty with Credit Suisse.
Yeah, good morning.
Good morning, John.
With George, at the beginning you talked about how you've seen the inventory reductions pretty dramatically across, you know, across all of your customer base, but you expect that at some point it gets overdone and you start to see a snapback. Do you have any color based on conversations that you've had and what you've seen with some of your customers as to when that snapback actually might really come back?
Well, I think the direct answer to your question is no. You know, some of them are still working through these inventories, John. But I think if you look at the pure dynamics of the system, as I've mentioned when I was making my remarks, you know, in a wholly efficient a correction process, you'd think about one inventory turn for the correction to take place. So, you know, we're running four turns per year, roughly speaking. You'd think it would take a full quarter. But in reality, there are no such things as 100% efficient channel corrections. So I think this thing is going to run through all or most all of the first quarter. I can't swear that it won't even bleed over a little bit into the second. But I think it's at that point, John, where you see the sort of settling down of the transients in the supply chain that would come back closer to what the real end market actually did. Of course, you know, we have a very, very complex business, very, very extensive, different national, different markets that are performing differently. But when you put all that in the pot and stir it, I'm thinking that the vast majority of this gets finished by the end of the first quarter, maybe a little bleed into the second. And so it's at that point, John, that we probably get a better sighting shot of what the real end market run rates really are. When all that clutter and all that confusion clears, and obviously we hope, and I expect also that we'll see significant recoveries in sales sometime in the second quarter.
Okay, great. And just as a quick follow-up, with regard to selling prices, I know, Pat, you had indicated, you know, the 1.7% real price increase that you saw in the fourth quarter were, you know, some of the largest that you've seen in, you know, a number of quarters out there. I'm wondering when you expect to see or if you expect to see any pushback on the price, given that the whole raw material environment's dropped down as well as, you know, clearly the economy's under a lot of pressure as well.
You know, John, of course you get pushback. I'd say we've already seen it, okay? And, you know, you would expect it. What, you know, first of all, in our plans, what we're thinking about is we don't really have price increases built into our 09 plans. You know, at best what we're thinking about is, you know, how do we hold what we've already, you know, gone after, reflecting our own cost inputs and so forth. You know, I think with the strength of our brands, the strength of our customer relationships in many cases gives me more confidence where we're positioned in the market than if I was at, you know, much more at the bottom end of the market. But that doesn't mean that we won't have it. We see it in our businesses all the time, and if we have to give back price, that just means we have to go after, you know, more in the way of, you know, other kind of productivity programs
And so our businesses are managing that very, very closely.
I think there's one other point I'd like to make, Johnny. If the environment is such that people can put pressure on us for price, the environment is such that we can put pressure on other people for price. So I don't expect that the gap, the increment, is going to alter much in terms of the overall margin of the company. So I think you've got, you know, the fact that what Pat mentioned about brand, the strength of our distribution channels, the wonderful reputation of our products, coupled with the fact that if we get pressured, we have clearly got an environment where we can pressure others. So I don't expect that the gap is going to alter our financials all that much, John.
Great. Thanks for the caller.
Thank you.
Our next question comes from the line of Mike Judd with Greenwich Consultant.
Hi, just a couple of quick things. The tax rate for 2009, do you have any guesstimate there?
Mike, we ended up first of all, the 2008 year at 30.9 on a kind of a exclude basis. For our planning purposes, for 2009, we're assuming it's going to be in about a 31% range.
Okay.
And that doesn't mean we're giving up. They're just, you know, that's from a planning standpoint. We'll keep working at it.
Okay, and fair enough. And I guess the book stockholders' equity was down around 19% sequentially.
Yes.
And that, no doubt, due to some of the, I guess, the pension issues, right?
Right.
And I guess if you could just kind of help us understand what that trend could look like. And there's also a significant amount of goodwill amortization on the balance sheet. Is there a chance that some of that will be written down as we go through the next year?
Okay. First of all, I'll answer your equity kind of question. In the press release, we go through the biggest description, of course, was the change in the pension funded status. Which I described in my comments, and I think it's in footnote J, I think is the footnote. I don't really, you know, if the pension markets remain relatively consistent over time, you won't see big movements. As a matter of fact, you'll see equity continuing to grow as our earnings, you know, as our earnings increase. So a lot of it will... is dependent upon what happens relative to some of our pension and post-retirement obligations. That's what will swing that around. But I don't see that as being a big movement necessarily going forward. This was a very unusual period, I think, for that to kind of play out. On goodwill, we look at our goodwill on a reported basis against all of our business units on an ongoing basis from an impairment perspective, and I don't see anything. We've completed our 08 assessments, and there's nothing impaired.
Okay, now I realize that the absolute level of pension expense is going up as it runs through the income statement, but are you anticipating making an additional voluntary pension contribution? So you're cutting back on CapEx and share repurchases. Will you be putting additional cash into the pension?
Yeah, Mike, in one of the slides, we show a number that from a planning standpoint, on a global basis, we have anywhere between maybe $600 and $850 million that we notionally are planning now for 2009. We'll make those decisions as we go through the year. So, yes, there is an increased pension. Now, none of those are mandatory. We have we're not in a situation where we are in any kind of a mandatory contribution in the U.S. and some of our international plans we have a little more of, but those are much smaller in nature.
Fair enough. Thank you.
Thank you.
Our next question comes from the line of Stephen Winokur with Sanford Bernstein.
Good morning.
Morning, Stephen.
I just had a first couple of questions in terms of the strategic programs that you've talked about the last investor days. The deferment of CapEx and all the just doing discretionary programs, what's the impact of that on the supply chain changes? Also on the R&D mix, so you're maintaining funding and increasing funding, but is there anything dramatic in terms of shifting R&D to product cost redesigns for 2009 versus the longer-term programs? And then the down-market strategy, are you accelerating the lower price entry programs as well?
Thanks, Steve. Let me have a crack at that question. Pat can chip in if he wants. The supply chain restructuring, Steve, had three elements. It had an element that was concerned with placing capacity close to customers and as a means of shortening supply chain and, in some cases, as a byproduct of that, improving the tax rates. There was a parallel activity, which was mostly in the United States, but not only in the United States, that was dedicated to what we called unpicking the hairball. In other words, it was long supply chains, multiple hops that went through a range of existing plants, all of which were going to remain open. So that program would be trying to cut seven hops down to five, three hops down to one, that kind of stuff. And then lastly, the third program here was the building of these super hubs that were in a place where we could take an advantage of great customer service, low costs and low taxes all in one location. So the three things were running in parallel. The first of those, the addition of capacity in places where we needed it, that is the program really that we've deferred at the moment because we don't need the capacity. Of course, it does slide our supply chain restructuring program a little bit to the right, but it is nevertheless the right thing to do. We will, however, still spend money on unpicking the hairball, as we call it, trying to take the seven stops to three, the three stops to one, the four stops to two, and so on and so forth. And in a limited number of cases, we'll invest in those super hubs, the third piece of the puzzle. And that's what's really brought our ability to drive the number down to where we are today. There's been little big change, Steve, in moving off longer-term programs to short-term programs. Almost by the time we would get such a thing mobilized and it would deliver effect, hopefully the economy will have recovered to the point where it's not needed anyway. So there's not very much of that going on. What is, however, going on is quite a bit of insourcing, Steve, where we are using some of our scientists to requalify materials where we can do it inside, or we can resource it to a second vendor at lower costs. It's all part and parcel of the sort of, shall we say, the inherent strengthening of the company. Those sorts of things are happening, but there's no real material policy change in our approach to R&D that might cause you concern for the long term.
Okay. And on the strategy of moving down market in products?
Seems to have worked in the places where we've done it, Steve. It seems to have worked absolutely brilliantly. I'll give you one or two quick examples. I think if you were there in our last investor meeting, we actually talked about a couple of them. One was in our air filters, and I'll try to make this story short. We used to have air filters, the Filtreat filters, just in the top of the market. I kind of was of the impression it was a relatively new product. It turns out we had that stuff in the market for about 8 years. And it was in limited distribution in True Value hardware stores, Ace, and places like that. And was a sort of specialist product, very high performing and relatively expensive. When we invented product that was suitable for the middle of the market, all of a sudden that opened the doors of getting mass distribution in the mass channel with the big retailers, the big ones that you know about. And in fact, what actually happened there, Steve, is we got growth in the middle and the top simultaneously. And we're actually working on things that we'll try to fill in the bottom now. And I could tell you parallel stories to that in a number of different businesses, in a number of different parts of the world. Seems to be working very, very well. And as long as we're careful about making sure we get growth in the top of the market, Steve, and we make sure that we properly use secondary brands and in some cases private labeling, it seems to be working extraordinarily well. It does not seem to be damaging margins and seems actually to be getting us more share, making us more influential with our customers and overall driving our factory absorption.
Great. Thank you. And one quick follow-up. If I compare, just looking at history, the last recessions, as different as they were, even in 93 when you had volume or revenue down, I don't know, about 20%, EBIT down about 10%, and 01, revenue and EBIT down around 4%, What are you doing differently this time where the experience is in a much worse situation? How do you see this 3M different now than in history?
Yeah, Steve, Pat here. This is probably a little difficult for either George or I to, because neither one of us were here, okay?
Yeah.
But, you know, if you look at, you know, kind of what we're doing, you know, George kind of outlined the number of actions we're doing. I think the company is far different than it was in the most recent downturn, you know, post 9/11. The strength of the portfolio, the company across our businesses are a lot stronger. Coming out of 2001, 2002, we really only had a couple of businesses that we were counting on, you know, for growth. And the reality is we're really counting on the broader portfolio to get us there. You know, on the cost side, we continue to work on, you know, all the avenues. George outlined a couple of things that we're doing on a more temporary basis around, freezing pay, some of our vacation accrual plans and so forth. So we effectively get to an acceptable near-term performance, but also make sure that we ensure that we keep investing in those things that are going to make us successful, you know, once the economy recovers. So I think we're doing the right kind of things. I'm very thankful for the margin structure that we have going into a recession. Gives us degrees of freedom, I think, that others, you know, may not have. So I feel very good about, where we're positioned.
Thank you.
Okay.
That concludes the question and answer portion of our conference. At this time, we will turn the call back over to 3M for some closing comments.
Well, I'd like to thank everybody for joining us this morning. We look forward to talking to you or speaking in person very soon. So have a great day.
Thank you very much, everyone.
Thank you.